This evening, I want to study something with you that is really important. It's mentioned in the New Testament. It's mentioned numerous times in the Old Testament. And let's begin with Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 19. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. Now, normally, that would not be good business. You know, if you're a retailer and you put stuff out for a sidewalk sale, and then at the end of the night you forget to bring the stuff inside, that's a loss of money. You know, if you're accounting and you're sending out bills and you forgot to, you know, send the bill for services rendered, that's going to cost you. And if you're a farmer and you're just counting beans, and it's, oh, we forgot that sheaf, we need to go get it. And the law said, don't go get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. You might remember in the book of Ruth, how she goes, you know, and there were these provisions in the law so that people could go in and glean afterwards. Do it for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. Deuteronomy 14, verse 20. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterwards. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. Deuteronomy 26, verse 12. When you have finished paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of tithing, giving it to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat within your towns and be filled. Job says this in Job chapter 29, verse 12, and then 31:18. This is where Job is in frustration. Remember, his friends are saying, his wife had said, curse God and die. His friends said, well, obviously there's some reasons this is happening. You've done something very badly. And he said, no, I was doing what was right. And I was helping people. I delivered the poor who cried for help and the fatherless who had none to help him. From my youth, the fatherless grew up with me as with a father. And from my mother's womb, I guided the widow. Now stop and think about this. This is still an important need today. But I want you to think about how it was especially important financially back then. We have programs like WIC or, you know, various government programs. And then there's Social Security. A lot of people have life insurance, et cetera, et cetera. So many times, even if a person has not been particularly wealthy, there will be some income at a point that a woman reaches widowhood. She may be suffering. She may be very financially disadvantaged. It may be difficult, but there will be some income. And usually, at least in this country, we try to, with different the government and different things, try to make sure that children are placed somewhere. But one of the things we're going to talk about tonight is that doesn't nearly satisfy all the needs that exist there. And so we're going to be thinking beyond just bare financial needs. But often the financial needs are there as well. It may be that that widow has a small Social Security check, but it doesn't mean that it's enough. It may be that there's some assistance available, but that doesn't mean they've got everything they need, and we can still be helpful to them in those ways. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 17, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause. Do you remember what Jesus said? Turn in your New Testament to the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 20, Verse 46. Beware of the scribes who desire to walk in long robes and love salutations in the marketplaces. This is the very end of Luke 20, coming up on the last verse. They love the chief seats in the synagogues, the chief place at the feast, who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. These shall receive greater condemnation. There are a lot of people in business that actually target the elderly as a way to get what they can from them. There are people that target the poor as a way to get what they can from them. I'm reminded of the text in the Minor Prophets where it says, you're picking the dust off the scalp of the poor. You know, you get enough poor people and you're picking everything you can off of them and you end up with a lot. Somebody's ending up with a lot, even as other people are being put into oppression. So you have this idea over and over and over. And notice here particularly the fatherless and the widows. Now let's come to the book of James. Verse 19. You know this, my beloved brethren, but let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man works not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, putting away all filthiness and overflowing of wickedness, receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. Excellent lesson Stephen brought to us this morning. That was just really effective and powerful and very helpful. And when he talked about, here's the word, but we have to let it get in here. That's what this verse is saying. Listen to this verse again. Receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. What did the word do on the hard ground? It didn't implant. It just hit and never went in. What did it do in the rocky ground? There was not enough root. Thorny ground. It's choked out. Here, we're told to receive with meekness the implanted word. Speaking of getting choked, I guess it's got a little bit choked, so I'm going to ask one of you brethren, please, read verse 22 through 25, please.
Be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word, not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself, and goes away, and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts,
all right. So don't just be a hearer, be a doer. James echoes the Sermon on the Mount over and over and over and over. If you remember, the Sermon on the Mount ended with what? Those that hear my word and do it are like a wise man that built his house on the rock. If you hear my word and don't do it, you're like a foolish man. You built your house on the sand, it's going to fall. James, echoing that, is saying be doers of the word, not hearers only. And if you don't control your tongue, verse 26, if any man thinks himself to be religious, but does not bridle his tongue, deceives his heart, this man's religion is vain. So let's just stop and think about that for a minute. Here we are. We've just sung songs. In a few minutes, we're going to have a closing prayer. We're reading scripture. We've got our religion. But if tomorrow, if what's coming out of our mouth is ungodly, be it gossip, we're lying to people, we're cheating people, we're slandering people, filth, vulgarity, profanity, then we're not fooling God. What does Galatians 6 say? You know, God is not mocked. we're only deceiving ourselves, and our religion is vain. So he says, that's not going to do it. Going through these motions but not controlling yourself is not going to do it. Then he says, here's what pure religion is, and this is what we're talking about tonight. Look at the text. Pure religion and undefiled before our God and Father is this. Do we want to be pure? Do we want to be undefiled? Do we want to be practicing the religion of our Lord and Savior? His brother, James, right here, tells us what pure and undefiled religion is. It is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and keep oneself unspotted from the world. In a nutshell, generally, what he's saying is be doing good things and don't be doing bad things. There should be an offense and a defense in our walk in life. Don't do these things. Keep yourself unspotted from the world. Do these things. But what are the two things that he singles out to do? Visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And so here's a question for us. You and I, when's the last time we visited the fatherless and the widow? Because these aren't just words. This is telling us what to do. What does it mean to visit? If you look up the Greek word here, the root word, it's episkitomai, and it's from these two words. Episkopos. Anybody recognize that? It's based on the same two root words, this word and this prefix for the word bishop, overseer, oversee. In this context, episkitomai, it has to do with visiting and seeing to, you know, looking after them. I'll give you a couple examples of where else this word is used, episkitomai. It's a different word than episkopos, but it's based on the same root word. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is going to separate the sheep and the goats. And he says to the sheep, when I was sick, you visited me. When I was in prison, you visited me. And he's going to say to the goats, when I was sick, you didn't visit me. When I was in prison, you didn't visit me. Now, part of that is what? Going for the visit. Have you ever visited somebody in the hospital? That's good. That's visiting the sick. But that's not all that this entails. In the first century, when somebody was sick, were they at, you know, Mount Sinai Hospital over there? And, you know, you went, who's really tending to the sick at the hospital? The nurses, the doctors, the things like that. So going for a social visit is certainly part of it, but that's not all it is. When Timothy is going to visit Paul as a prisoner, does Paul just say, yeah, it'll be good to see you. We'll have a cup of coffee and chat. But he's saying, bring the cloak. Bring the parchments. In other words, part of visiting is also seeing what that person needs. So it says here, visit the fatherless and widows. It says, visit them in their affliction. Does that mean walk over there? Why, hello there, little fatherless person. Oh, I see your affliction. Have a nice day. Well, hello, destitute widow. You know, I wanted to say hello, and oh, wow, the cupboards are really, really bare, and there's a lot of things that need repair around here. Well, it was nice talking to you. That reminds you of what from James chapter 2. If a brother or sister is naked and in lack of clothing and food, and you say, go in peace, be warmed and filled, that's... He says you're not giving them what they need. So to visit somebody in their affliction Yes, it includes visiting somebody at the hospital, maybe taking them a card or a flower and cheering them up. That's definitely part of it. But that's not all there is to it. It's thinking, what does this person need? How can I help them? So, the widows and their affliction. And let's stop for a minute and just say what I don't think this is talking about. Years ago, there was a big, big movement and push among churches to promote churches sending money to orphanages. And if you did not get on board with that, you were kind of slandered and attacked and various things. This passage is not talking about the church sending church funds somewhere. In fact, Vine's expository dictionary on this word emphasizes that what's needed here is the personal attachment of going to them in their affliction, not just a rich man sending money somewhere. In the 1800s, there were brethren who wanted to do this. Here would be a church, here would be a church, here would be a church, and here would be a church. And instead of them taking monies that had been contributed for the work of the church and sending out evangelists like Antioch, you know, Paul and Barnabas or different things like that, somebody came up with the big idea of building a human organization, and they called it the American Christian Missionary Society. And then the churches were asked, you all give money to this organization and it will send out the preachers. Well, there's a real problem with that. Who built the church? Who designed the church? Jesus said, I will build my church. Overseers in the church, where are their qualifications found? In the New Testament. What does it do? You look to see in the New Testament. Who built this? It's a human organization built in the 1800s. Why should churches built by the Lord turn over funds given for the work of the church to a human organization to send out and do this? Now, no doubt many people were helped by that. There were also people that were hurt by that. And it was not always on the up and up. I remember Wilson telling about years and years ago, Child Haven. My dad had a somewhat similar experience with Child Haven in North Alabama. There's one of these places, and they asked churches to send money to. And the impression was that it was orphans, but when they had a fire and dad offered to take in some of the kids, they said, oh no, we just sent them to their homes, which was kind of unusual. And then one time, I believe it was in Huntsville, there had been a couple that had been killed, I believe, in a car accident. And there were some children left, and they were put down at Child Haven. If I remember the story correctly, Wilson's father, this was years ago, wanted to inquire about taking those children into his home and provide for them. And the orphanage said, no, we won't do that. If we start letting people adopt, we won't have any orphans left. Sometimes with bureaucracies, you end up with the mechanism being more important to the people running it than what actually needs to be done. So this is not what we're talking about. This chapter is not talking about the church should send money to this organization or that organization. It's talking about what we as individuals do. Look back at the text. Verse 22, be ye doers of the word, not hearers only, deluding your own selves. If any one is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man beholding his face in a mirror. He beholds himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what manner of man he was. He that looks into the perfect law of the law of liberty and so continues, being not a hearer that forgets, but a doer that works, this man shall be blessed in his doing. If any man thinks himself to be religious while he bridles not his tongue, but deceives his heart, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion for who? For a man, for a person. This is not pure religion for a church, pure religion for the church treasury. This is talking about what we do. Now, There are people around the world that are widows and fatherless and in desperate need, and there are some charities in which you can do that from afar. But another thing that's good to do is to do it where you can visit them in their affliction. And there are people here that need that, and there are people that need money. There are also many, 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 many people around us that don't need money as much as they need some other things. And I want us to think about that. This is by Isabel Sawhill, Brookings Institute. Are children raised with absent fathers worse off? I'm going to read you several articles, and I want you to listen to these statistics, and I want you to think about the problem in our country of fatherless children. Now, they're not usually fatherless because there was a hardworking, honest, godly man that had married their mother, and then he died or got hit by a train. So many children are being left fatherless now. Why? Because the fathers simply left. And what does that do to the children? And what can we do about that? Children raised by single mothers are more likely to fare worse on a number of dimensions, including school achievement, social emotional development, health, and success in the labor market. They are at greater risk of parental abuse and neglect, especially from live-in boyfriends who are not their biological fathers. Common problem. More likely to become teen parents, less likely to graduate from high school. Not all children raised in single-parent families suffer these adverse outcomes. It is simply that the risks are greater for them. Any discussion of the impacts of single parenthood must take into account selection effects. Single parents may be more likely to have other traits unrelated to their marital status that cause their children to have worse outcomes than children raised in two-parent homes. It may not be the divorce or unwed birth that causes the problem, but instead the underlying personal attributes, mental health competencies that produce both a broken family and worse outcomes for the child. As a result of the death of one parent, do not have the same poor outcomes as children raised by single parents due to divorce or out of wedlock birth. The top of that paragraph is snipped off, so let me explain what it's saying. When you look at the statistics, the children that were in a stable home where a man made a commitment to a woman made a commitment to a man, they were together, they brought a child into the world, but death took the father, those children do better than the ones where the father just didn't choose to be there. So it's not simply whether the father's there or not, there are other things going on. The type of home where it is decided to engage in sexual activity with whoever or whenever without thought of what's good for the kids. Can you see how that's already setting up a scenario where it's not going to be thought about what's good for the kids? Whereas the person that wanted what's good for the kids and then tragedy took someone away, you still have a person of character here who wants what? Who wants what's good for the kids. And there are wonderful examples of wonderful people that have been raised by mothers who have done that. So, death, unlikely divorce, or out of wedlock childbearing is more likely to be a random event not connected to the attributes or temperament of the parents. The lesser disadvantage for children ending up in a single-parent family as a result of death of one parent may reflect this fact and point to the importance of taking unobserved attributes, temperaments, or behaviors into account. This is from National Center for Fathering. 20 million children in the U.S. are living in a fatherless home. 20 million. They are four times more likely to be raised in poverty. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are fatherless. substance abuse. They are 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances. 71% of all adolescent substance abusers come from a fatherless home. 80% of adolescents in psychiatric hospitals come from fatherless homes. 2 times more likely to commit suicide. 9 times more likely to drop out of school. 70% of adolescents in juvenile correctional facilities come from fatherless homes. 60% of rapists from fatherless homes. 11 times more likely to be engaged in violent behavior. 20 times more likely to be incarcerated. Just a whole lot of problems in our culture right now are related to this problem of fatherless homes. And again, most of these are not simply where tragedy occurred, where a man wanted to be there but now doesn't get to be. The problem is our country is too many men that are wanting to be with women, not caring what the outcome of that is, and then children suffering the consequences. I want us to be thinking about things that we can do in this regard. 70% of teen pregnancies, and I imagine that would be teen births, because I don't know that they've got a count of all the morning after pills and everything, which is another problem. But 70% of teen pregnancies happen in fatherless homes. School shootings. Heritage Foundation, this is Emilia Kao, Crisis of Fatherless Shooters. Among the 25 most cited school shooters since Columbine, 75% were reared in broken homes. Tupac Shakur said, I know for a fact that if I had had a father, I'd have had some discipline. I'd have more confidence. Your mother can't calm you down the way a man can. You need a man to teach you how to be a man. Sons of divorce, school shooters. Another shooting, this is after another one of the school shootings. Another son of divorce from Adam Lanza, who killed 26 children and adults a year ago at Sandy Hook in Newton, Connecticut, to Carl Pearson, who shot a teenage girl and killed himself this last past Friday in Colorado. This is from a few years ago. One common and largely unremarked thread tying together most of the school shooters is that they have come from homes marked by divorce or an absent father. There's one article, and I've got it up here if someone wants to look at it later, where they go through and they list the home circumstances of just school shooter after school shooter after school shooter. It's just sad, the type of homes that they come from. There were a few, like Columbine. Those two both lived, if I remember correctly, with their father and mother. But that's the exception. A lot of disastrous stuff. And it doesn't mean that everybody that their father ran off them is going to be a school shooter. Of course not. But there's a lot of problems. The social scientific evidence about the connection between violence and broken homes could not be clearer. My own research suggests that boys living in single mother homes are almost twice as likely to end up delinquent compared to boys who have a good relationship with their father. I want you to pay, this is going to be the last set of quotes we're going to look at. I want you to especially pay attention to this one. This is written by a fellow that was raised in a fatherless home. And he says something really important at the end. Harvard sociologist Robert Sampson has written that family structure is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, predictor of variations in urban violence across the cities in the United States. His views are echoed by eminent criminologist Michael, I'm not going to try to do those names, who have written that family measures as the percentage of the population divorced, the percentage of households headed by women, and the percentage of unattached individual community are among the most powerful predictors of crime rates. I was preaching one time in Georgia, and there was a lady in the audience, and she came to me afterwards. No, I think it was Alabama. Yeah, Alabama. And she had been a guard at a prison. And looking at the biographical information of the prisoners, Here would be the prisoner's name. And here would be a column for mother's name and a column for father's name. All these prisoners' name. Under mother's name, there's the answer, there's the answer, there's the answer, there's the answer, there's the answer. Under father's name, blank. Not every single one, but so many of them. Empty. The men had not even stuck around long enough that he knew who it was. And the mother had maybe had lived a lifestyle where she didn't know who it was. Why is father such a big deal for our boys? Almost all of these incidents involve boys. Putting the argument positive, sociologist David Poponin says, fathers are important to their sons as role models. They're important for maintaining authority and discipline. They're important in helping their sons develop self-control and feelings of empathy toward others, character traits that are found to be lacking in violent youth. Boys then who do not grow up with an engaged, attentive, and firm father are more vulnerable and being swept away. And here's this last part. Of course, most boys who grow up in a home without their father turn out okay. They pick up the right cues, listen, from a conscientious high school soccer coach. Flourish under the watchful eye of a devoted grandfather. Benefit from the consistent discipline of a strong single mother. But every year, enough fatherless boys fall prey to the ministrations of a gang or the rage induced by a high school bully or emotional fallout or painful divorce to end up causing real harm to themselves or other members of their communities. So if the nation is serious about ending the scourge of school shooting, it must get serious about strengthening the families that are our first line of defense in preventing our boys from falling into a downward spiral of rage, hopelessness, or nihilism. Bradford Wilcox, raised by a single mother, senior fellow at Institute for Family Studies. You see what he said in there? One thing that has helped a lot of these boys was other men in the community that stepped up and provided some role model. So let's go back now and think about our text. Pure religion and undefiled before our God and Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. We could focus more on widows some other time. Right now, tonight, I'm wanting to focus on the fatherless part. What can you do, what can I do to help somebody that's fatherless? One of the greatest things that could be done would be to adopt them into your home or into my home. That's one possibility. Foster care is another one. There are also some dangers with that. You have to think long and hard about what you're doing and understand the risk because of what some of these children have been through. But it's a great gift to a child to do that. But if you're not ready to do that or in a position to do that, here's something else. When a boy does not have a male role model in his life, there's a void there. And if someone older than him cares enough about him to pay some attention to him and give him some guidance, not every one of them is going to listen and benefit from it, but some do. Some do. Like this fatherless fellow that grew up fatherless said one thing that is some coach pays attention to him. Some other relative pays attention to him. So, if you know somebody in the neighborhood and there's that boy, maybe his father is dead. Maybe he doesn't know who his father is. Maybe his father's a bum. Maybe his father is out of the picture and only sees him every once in a while. What can you do? You can spend some time with him. You can pay attention to him. You can ask him how things are going and build a bond there and be somebody that he knows cares about him. You can take him fishing. You can do something with him. If you're coaching, pay attention to those boys. If your children have some friends You might be in a position, now, when you get into some of the dysfunction that's going on in our society now, and a lot of the sexual abuse and other things, be aware that there are a lot of dangers there, and you've got a first priority of protecting your children. But if your children are mature and strong and safe, and they are with you on understanding we can be an influence on this person, and you're not worried about the influence going another way, that can be an opportunity to help give that person a safe place. I remember one man talking about when he was growing up, this one house that they would go to, and how he just loved to go to that house, and just the peace and joy and love that was there in that house. And if you're growing up without that, that's like an island in the middle of a turbulent sea. And they can just really appreciate that. If you've got a business where you might want to hire somebody like that, if a fella is from a rough back, don't automatically discount him. Maybe give him a chance. See how he does. Now, in business, you can't just be throwing away money at people that don't, you know, if they're going to be a sluggard and dishonest and steal from you and those things. But there are some of these that need a role model and somebody to give them a chance, to invest in them and to believe in them and give them a chance. What a difference that can make. So as we go through life, there are kids all around us from dysfunctional families. And there are kids around us whose fathers don't really care that much about. And you know what we have an opportunity to do? We have an opportunity to care about them and maybe give them stability, maybe give them a lesson, maybe give them something, give them some time so that they can start having a chance at seeing how life can be lived. Learning those things in Proverbs that nobody is going to teach them where they're at right now. Should we do things like that? What does this text say? Pure and undefiled religion is a visit the fathers and different lesson the widows in their affliction. Thank you for your attention. If you need to respond to the gospel, won't you do so as we stand and sing?